This is the Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. Thanks for listening. I am super excited by today's show, which features my Reason colleague Jacob Sullum and a long, in-depth discussion about vaping, electronic cigarettes, nicotine, pot, and any number of other related issues. Before we get to that, though, I want to ask you to subscribe to this podcast right now by going to reason.com/podcasts or to Apple, Google, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, check out and subscribe to Reason's other podcasts. We've got two other great shows. They include The Reason Roundtable, a freewheeling, rollicking weekly discussion of the biggest stories in the news that features me, Catherine Mangu Ward, Peter Sooner, and Matt Welch on a regular basis. That drops every Monday. And then there's also the Soho Forum Debates, which presents the debate series we sponsor monthly in New York City. The Soho Forum features Nobel Prize winners, radical thinkers, and other public intellectuals facing off over things like the future of Bitcoin, electric vehicles, government debt, illegal drugs, robotics, sex work, and other controversial topics. Please go to reason.com/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to The Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie, The Reason Roundtable, and the Soho Forum Debates. Okay, on to today's show. It seems as if every week, maybe every day, brings a major news story about how vaping is really, 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 really bad for you. Now, only a few years ago, electronic cigarettes were hailed as a new and healthier way for people to consume nicotine and pot, and the number of vapers worldwide has grown sevenfold since just 2011 to an estimated 41 million users. Now, though, vaping is being attacked as a dangerous trend that's luring teenagers into a deadly habit that might be as bad for you as traditional smoking. Reports of vaping-related deaths and respiratory illnesses appear daily on cable news shows and newspapers and online. The FDA is considering a ban on flavored e-cigarettes, and many states have already instituted strict regulations on vaping sales and use. Congress has recently voted to change the age for legal tobacco and e-cigarette sales to 21, up from 18. But is vaping bad for you? Should we be panicking? Sometimes we should, most of the times not. What sorts of policies should govern the use of electronic cigarettes for nicotine and for marijuana? To answer these and other questions, I sat down with my colleague, Reason Senior Editor Jacob Sullum, who has spoken and written extensively and authoritatively about the issues for years. Jacob Sullum, thanks for talking.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So what are critics saying about vaping?
Well, there are two major issues that often get conflated. One is the increase in e-cigarette use by teenagers, which increased sharply the last couple of years. And the other is a more recent phenomenon, which is vaping-related lung diseases, that these cases started to emerge last summer. And people often conflate those two things, even though these diseases seem to involve, well, they overwhelmingly involve illegal cannabis products as opposed to nicotine, as opposed to legal nicotine products, may be entirely attributable to those black market cannabis products. It's not completely clear. There's no evidence that they're actually caused by products like Juul or other commercial brands of e-cigarettes that deliver nicotine that you buy from a legal store that gets it from a legal manufacturer. And people are confusing those two issues. So the concern about the teenagers, you're going to be much more concerned about the fact that adolescents are using e-cigarettes more than they used to if you think these e-cigarettes are potentially deadly. But is a mistaken notion. So it's definitely true that more teenagers are vaping than used to. But the question is, how serious an issue is that?
Right. And so is there, and part of the panic over teen vaping started before these respiratory illnesses or deaths attributed to vaping.
Yes.
So let's talk about that for a second. Why are people worried about teens vaping?
Well, they have several concerns. The most serious concern, I think, would be if you imagine that some teenagers who would never use a tobacco product, because e-cigarettes are available, will get introduced to nicotine, will get hooked on nicotine, and then eventually move on to smoking. That would be bad. There's very little evidence that anything like that is happening. In fact, as the popularity of e-cigarettes took off among teenagers and young adults, not only has the downward trend in smoking in those groups continued, but it's actually accelerated. Mm-hmm. So if anything, it looks like e-cigarettes are replacing conventional cigarettes among teenagers and young adults.
And certainly you hear that a lot of anecdotal reports, at least, of adults saying, you know, I couldn't stop smoking until vaping, and now I don't vape, and I don't smoke, and I don't even really vape anymore. Is it accurate to say that a lot of people, or how many people, are using vaping as a way to get off of regular cigarettes?
Well, there are a few million Americans who used to smoke and now vape. So we know that. We know from clinical research where they do a randomized trial that using e-cigarettes to quit smoking is about twice as effective as using conventional nicotine substitutes like nicotine patches, nicotine gum, that sort of thing. So it clearly is promising as a way to help people quit smoking. And we also know that it's far less dangerous than smoking. Just the fact that, first of all, it doesn't contain tobacco. It doesn't burn anything. So the fact that you're not inhaling smoke makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. They've measured levels of various potentially hazardous chemicals in the bloodstreams of vapors versus smokers, and they find that the levels in vapors are comparable to the levels in people, almost like the levels in people who don't smoke at all, who don't smoke and don't vape. There are far fewer dangerous chemicals to worry about to begin with, and what few ones they sometimes find are at much, much lower levels. So we know that it's a much safer a way to get nicotine than smoking is. And we don't want to be discouraging people who are current smokers from considering this alternative or making it harder for them to find those products. And even among teenagers, as I was saying, if you're talking about teenagers who are now vaping, who otherwise would be smoking, it's better that they're vaping. I mean, if you look at the historical data on smoking among teenagers, the levels have never been lower. More teenagers are vaping now than are smoking by far. And that's a positive development. It would be much worse in terms of health consequences if you had a whole lot more teenagers smoking but very few vaping, or if they didn't vape at all. So you really have to look at who are these people who are the teenagers who are vaping regularly. And so even though they may say that, oh, it's like 28% of high school students are current vapers, that means past month. If you say who is vaping on a daily basis, right? It's about 6%. So that's a significant phenomenon. But it's not a whole generation getting addicted to nicotine, which is a phrase you will often hear. And furthermore, if you dig into the data and look, who are these people? It is very rare for somebody who has never used tobacco products to be a daily vapor. The vast majority of people who are vaping daily are people who also have smoked. Now, you may say, oh, the vaping is leading to the smoking. But in fact, the vaping generally precedes the smoking. So it doesn't look like vaping is serving as a gateway to smoking. It looks like vaping is serving as a substitute for smoking, which on the whole is a positive development.
Well, now let's talk about the health effects that are showing up. How many deaths have been attributed to vaping at this point?
There were between 40 and 50 last time I checked the CDC's data, and that's out of a few thousand cases, more than 2,000 cases.
And that number is going to continue to kind of
tick up. Each week they update the numbers. But what they find when they look at these patients, for example, in a recent study of patients in Minnesota, first of all, asked them, they interviewed a bunch of them and said, what products did you use? And they found that overwhelmingly they were using THC products, not nicotine products. Now, even the people who say, I never vaped anything but nicotine, first of all, they may not know what they actually vaped. If they're using black market products, they may not know what those products contained. Secondly, they may not be telling the truth because they may be reluctant to admit that they used an illegal drug. Mm-hmm. And we know from some of the research that some of the people who don't report vaping THC test positive for THC. Right. So clearly there's some underreporting. So it could very well be the case that these conditions are entirely attributable to black market cannabis products.
When you say black market cannabis products, you're not talking about you can go to places like California or Colorado, Nevada, and buy legal THC vaping products. So you're not talking about the ones that you would get at a dispensary.
Right. There have been a couple of cases. There were a couple of cases in Oregon where lung injuries were associated with the purchase of products from a state licensed source. And there is some evidence that I believe it's true that some licensed retailers or some licensed manufacturers were producing THC vapes that included vitamin E acetate, which is at this point the main chemical of concern. This is a substance that both allows you to dilute your vaping solution and to thicken it at the same time. So it doesn't look like it's been diluted and it looks more like what people are expecting mm-hmm. when they get a cannabis extract. This was introduced, it looks like, relatively recently. And that's important because these cases came to light only recently. In that same Minnesota study, they compared THC products that had been seized by the police last September, so September of 2019, to products that had been seized last year in 2018. And they found that there was vitamin E acetate in all of the products seized this year and none of the products seized last year.
Why is vitamin E showing up?
It seems to be associated with these conditions. The theory is that people are sucking fat particles into their lungs that get trapped in there, and it can lead to a form of pneumonia. It can lead to other kinds of lung problems, conceivably. It's not 100% sure that that's what's happening, but that is the most likely culprit at this point. There could be other toxins, it could be contaminants or things people deliberately add in some of these, black market products, because you have no control, you have no quality control, and you don't know what you're getting. That's the crucial issue. So to the extent that they respond to this problem by the governments, states or the federal government respond by banning products, it only makes things worse because you're pushing people to use these black market vapes where you don't know what you're getting and you don't know what's in them. Yeah. One other thing that's worth noting is that when they test lung fluid from these patients, they consistently find vitamin E acetate. So that's another piece of evidence that suggests that's causing the problem.
So how are vaping products being currently regulated in the market?
Well, the nicotine products have been sort of temporarily grandfathered by the FDA. All the companies that produce them, that have them on the market now, are allowed to do that only because the FDA is letting it happen. They are all supposed to submit applications for approval next year, within the next few months. So each product, which includes every variation, so every flavor, every nicotine concentration, obviously every model of vaping device and so on, they have to submit separate applications for each of those to the FDA. And while those applications are being processed, they can continue to sell the products. But if they haven't submitted an application, they must stop selling the product. And if the FDA does not approve their application, they also have to stop selling. So this is a very expensive process. I mean, there's a debate about exactly how much it's going to cost, but even the FDA says it's in hundreds of thousands of dollars per application. So if you're a company, especially if you're a small company, a mom and pop operation that is producing dozens of different flavors, you need to apply for approval of each of those flavors. And it's not clear exactly what you have to do to get the FDA's approval. The standard is they have to decide whether this is good for public health or not.
Right.
And they
it's not enough to simply show that it's safe.
It's not enough to show, I don't want to say safe. We should always say safe or less hazardous because nothing is 100% safe, but definitely much less hazardous than conventional cigarettes, which of course are continue to be available. It's not enough to show that. And there's very clear evidence that these are much less hazardous. Very clear that if you are a smoker who switches to vaping, you're going to be much better off in terms of your health. That's not enough because the FDA also will look at who might start vaping who otherwise never would have used a tobacco product, including teenagers as well as adults. Might some of those people then move on to use tobacco products? What about people who might have quit smoking except they started vaping when they couldn't smoke and now they're continuing a habit they otherwise would have quit? So that you can't really project all of that, but they're supposed to pretend to project that, and they're supposed to be demanding evidence on points like those from these manufacturers. Right. So it's a difficult process. A big company like Juul, which is partly owned by Altria now, they can definitely afford to go through this process and get their products approved. The vast majority of companies are not going to be able to afford it. Some of them may only be able to afford it for a few of what they are now offering. So basically, the market is going to look much different. It's going to wipe out a lot of the competition, a lot of the variety. And that's a shame.
Artisanal vaping is probably going to be a thing of the past.
Well, right?
And this industry went from zero to where it is now. It's billions of dollars. And a lot of that is like small producers.
Yes. I mean, you have in any town, significant size, you've got vape shops where they not only sell the devices, but they also sell the e-liquid that goes in the devices, and they very often concoct it there. Mm-hmm. They will make it to order. They will combine the flavors you want with the nicotine concentration you want. That will be basically impossible. You're not going to have small businesses that can meet this regulatory burden. So they're going to go out of business. And the same threat, of course, comes from legal bans on e-cigarette flavors.
So talk
if you ban e-cigarette flavors, you are banning the products that former smokers overwhelmingly prefer. And everybody says, oh, these are clearly designed to lure teenagers because of the fruity and flavors and the candy flavors and the dessert flavors. And it's true that those do appeal to teenagers. And the question, they also appeal to adults. It's very clear that those are the flavors that people who have quit smoking overwhelmingly prefer. So you're wiping out the vast majority of the market by banning those flavors.
At the state level, a variety of states have done various things. What's a typical kind of state reaction, and particularly in states where marijuana is legal? So how is THC, legal THC vaping at the state level, how is that likely to be regulated?
Well, a bunch of states imposed emergency bans. These are unilateral bans that are imposed by the executive branch, by the governor. And typically what they have done is banned flavored vaping products. In Massachusetts, they impose a total ban on vaping products, including marijuana, which is legal there now. And so I was just in Boston. If you go to a state-licensed dispensary there, you will see no vaping products whatsoever. So that is a total ban on vaping products, which made a kind of sense. I mean, it was a little more even-handed. But, I mean, those... The real concern is not just cannabis products, but specifically black market products. So it doesn't make sense in the sense that if people really like vaping, and now you've made the legal, you know, THC vapes, you know, no longer available, they're going to be more inclined to use the black market product, which is the source of the problem. But at least they're not, you know, just going after flavored, you know, nicotine e-cigarettes and pretending that this is doing something about these lung injuries, because it has nothing to, as far as we can tell, it has nothing to do. Those products have nothing to do with the lung injuries. So I think in Massachusetts, the ban will expire, the temporary ban will expire soon, but the state legislature has come in and now they are banning just specifically nicotine vaping products in any flavor except tobacco. Hmm. But you will once again be able to buy the marijuana, you know, vaping products in whatever flavors they want to offer. And there are a lot of interesting flavors out there. So that's a sort of weird inconsistency. And it doesn't make sense if your concern is smoking-related disease and death, because inevitably, a lot of these people who have quit smoking are going to go back to smoking once the products they prefer are no longer legally available. And a lot of people who might have switched will now be less likely to try out e-cigarettes if all they can get is the tobacco flavor, which is terrible, by the way. I know the tobacco flavors, it's a matter of taste, obviously, but overwhelmingly, the smokers are trying to get away from this flavor that they associate with their former habit, mm-hmm. which makes a kind of psychological sense. And they should have those options.
I mean, does this, the vaping, you know, moment we're in, does it, do you think it qualifies as a kind of moral or healthcare panic? So, you know,
it is a panic. Yeah. It's a panic in two ways. One, that people are implying that legal nicotine e-cigarettes might just kill you, when in fact, if you're a smoker, they might just save your life. Is the real, you know, the reasonable way to look at the issue. And the other thing is that people are panicking about teenage vaping, which I would say is cause for concern, but it's not as if it's going to kill them. And it's not as if every, you know, every teenager, even a large portion of teenagers are addicted to nicotine now. It's, like I said, about 6% who are daily vapers. And then among those daily vapers, the vast majority are people who have tried cigarettes, conventional cigarettes, and may in fact be using vaping as a substitute, which is a positive development. So I don't think it's something to panic about. I don't think it's something to, certainly not a reason to ban products that ought to be available to adults who would like to use them as a safer source of nicotine.
Is there a sense, particularly at the state level, you know, is there evidence that will persuade the regulators to say, you know what, we made a mistake, we're going to let these products go back on the market?
Well, I think as more evidence emerges that implicates these black market THC products in the lung disease outbreak, gradually you will see government agencies acknowledging this reality. The CDC has already changed the advice it is giving. It is emphasizing black market product, in particular black market THC products. Also, you know, conceivably there's a threat from black market nicotine products as well. You don't really know what's in them either. But at this point, we know the vast majority of these cases are tied to the cannabis products. So they are starting to change what they're saying. And one thing that the FDA and CDC have been saying for quite a while now is, if you are a smoker who has switched to vaping, don't switch back. Well, that's sound advice, but it's undermined by this panic that you generate by implying that, oh, that jewel might just kill you because of this disease, the lung disease outbreak that actually has nothing to do with
prostate. What's a preferable regulatory structure?
Well, I think there should be rules against fraud. You should have to say what's in the product. It should not be so cumbersome to get approval that you wipe out most of the competition and you discourage innovation. Because if you have to, if every time you change a product, it becomes a new product and you have to submit a new application, that obviously discourages from making products that are more convenient, that are more economical, that are more appealing, that are potentially less dangerous, because in some cases you have issues with batteries that have been known to explode. And so if you have an approach to create a new battery that avoids that issue, you're not allowed to do it. You can't introduce that right away. You have to go through this long process of getting approval. You know, you can also imagine there are ways to prevent underage use of these products. There's schemes involving apps on your phone that would communicate with your vaping device, and it would prevent anybody except the authenticated owner from using the device. I don't know if that would ever take off, but it's an option you can't even try in the current regulatory environment because it would take so long to get approval for something like that. So we want to have an environment where people know what they're getting, unlike in the black market, and where there's room for competition and innovation. And where the barriers to entry are not so high that only big corporations can participate.
Do consumers have enough information to make an informed decision?
Well, if by consumers you're referring to smokers who are thinking of switching to e-cigarettes, yes, you have definitely have enough information at this point to know that if you make that switch, your risk of developing life-threatening disease will be much, much lower. Mm-hmm. We don't know all of the potential health risks of vaping because we don't have long-term data. We've only, this is something that's only been around for a decade or so. And so it's possible that there are some risks that are not now recognized, but there's no way that this is going to be anywhere near as dangerous as lighting something on fire and inhaling all the combustion products that come out of that. So for smokers, it's very clear that if they switch to this other source of nicotine, their health risks are going to go way down.
Okay, we will leave it there. We've been talking with Jacob Solomon, Reason senior editor and the author of Saying Yes in Defense of Drug Use about vaping. Jacob, thanks for talking.
Thank you.
This has been the Reason interview with Nick Gillespie. Please go to reason.com/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to this show. Also check out the Reason Roundtable and the Soho Forum debates. Thanks for listening.